And that is a good point. I'm very definitely looking forward to the times of refreshing. And I think even in the dark times and the things leading up to it, we can see it. I guess that is the good news. You know, the word says things like, look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. We've heard a lot of those promises. And the key, and this is really the reminder, I guess, among the several major messages of Pesach, one of them is that he is who he says he is, and we can count on those promises. And that's particularly appropriate to remember right now. So what I want to do this evening, because at least the standard Torah portion for the time of this particular time of the year, the beginning of the spring feast, is to talk about the Passover. And there's a couple of things. Typically, it's Exodus chapter 12. We'll go there a little bit. You know, there's other places. There's lots of other places where there are references to it in Scripture, to the Passover, that is, and to the celebration and to the times. One of them is in Joshua chapter 5. We'll probably touch on that at least. Deuteronomy 16, Deuteronomy 26, famous for parts of the Haggadah. But let's start with 12, and let me just make a couple of notes. I'm not going to go through the whole story. We're going to do that in the next 24 hours or so for those that aren't doing it even right now. I know there's a lot of folks tonight that are doing that. That's good. But it says in chapter 12 of Exodus, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and Aaron in Mitzrayim, while they were still there. And he said, this is to be to you, this month, will be to you a beginning of months, first month of the year to you. So, speak to the whole congregation of Israel, tell them, on the 10th day of this month, go get yourself a lamb, one per household. And there's some specifications there, tells us a little bit about it. I'm not going to go into detail all the pieces here, but keep it till the 14th day of the same month. And then the whole congregation, Kol Edat of Israel, is to kill it at dusk. And then, of course, what they did is they took the blood and the hyssop, and they put it upon the house, upon the two side posts of the lintel and above. And it says you're to eat the flesh in that night. Roast it with fire, unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Eat it. Roasted with fire. Don't let any of it remain until the morning. If you do, that gets burned with fire. Eat it. Eat it in a position of being able to hit the road. Jack, don't you come back. No more, no more. With your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, your staff in your hand, eat it in haste. It's the Passover. Now, we're going to remember it a little bit differently. In fact, I guess if I was to say what is different about the Passover now, this is probably the most leisurely meal of the year for most of us. And that's okay, because we're doing a lot of remembrance. But some of the other key things here, this part I want to emphasize. I will go through the land of Egypt, Mitzrayim, that night, smiting the firstborn, he says, and I will execute judgment against all of the so-called Elohim of Egypt, the gods, Ani Yahuwah. Now, those of you that heard me teach the Exodus and this before, I think those words are so important. Ani Yahuwah, I am. I am that I say I am. I am who I say I am. I keep my promises. And that is the central thing that is repeated over and over and over and over again. You can count on this. You can literally stake your lives and everything you have and everything you will be, your neshama, your nefesh, all of it, on the fact that I am who I say I am and I will do what I say I will do. And it says, you're to keep this memorial as a feast to Yahuwah throughout your generations forever, ha'olam, amen. Okay, I've emphasized this as well, but certainly I think there's more than a bit of irony in this. We've got a pagan church today that no longer acknowledges something that the creator of the universe, who is who he says he is, says to keep forever. And what would be funny if it wasn't so disgusting is the fact that they claim that the Passover lamb that they honor said that it was done away with. Well, A, that would have disqualified. B, he didn't say that. And C, then why the blankety blank do they rename this whole season after a pagan goddess? You want to see if you can't just in your face slap the creator of the universe around and make a mockery? Yeah, try taking the things he says to keep forever, and here's how to do it, and change how it's done, when it's done, and then rename it after a pagan goddess. When he's just finished saying, I'm going to execute judgment against Kol, all of the fake Elohim of Egypt. And then we wonder why it is we read the news like we're seeing. And why it is that so much is coming down that's just so nasty and evil. And why we're fixing to head right back into the very same kind of bondage. and indeed most of America and most of the Western world is already there, because they long since lost the whole point. And that really is the central thing that I want to make sure we refer to, not just forever, throughout your generations, wherever you may be, in the land and out of the land, remember. But that's the key, remember. One of the emphases that is in the text, and I'm going to hit it a little bit tonight too, is teach your children. What's the point of teaching our children if it's not to say, hey, we're supposed to remember these things? Let me read just a couple of verses here that I think are at least appropriate, even though maybe we're told in some places that they're done away with. The first day of this 8 days of feast, 7 days, well, it depends on how you count it, right? We've already talked about that. There's to be a holy convocation, no work, except for the fact that you can do the things that you need to do to eat, so we can prepare this wonderful feast tomorrow. Anyway, you shall observe this feast of unleavened bread. For this day I brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim. Observe this, therefore, he's going to say it again, throughout your generations by a chukat, an ordinance forever. From the 14th day of the month at evening, you're to eat unleavened bread till the 1 20th day at evening. 7 days, no leaven in your house or your houses. Eat nothing that is leavened. And a lot of people will argue about this, you know, in years past, and I'm not going to argue with people that say, oh, well, we don't eat baking soda. We don't choose to eat baking soda. That's okay if you don't. My own take is that leavening means chametz. And if you see comments later, like a little leaven leavens the whole lump and similar kinds of things, and understand what chametz is, it's yeast. The reason why it's likened, at least in my opinion, this is Markology, but the words are consistent, at least with what I'm suggesting to you. Chametz is a living thing. And if you think about sin and the metaphor here, it too is a living thing. A little leavens the whole lump. It grows. So baking soda is a chemical process. Again, I have no problem with people say, well, if it even smells like a leavening, I don't want it. Okay, great. More power to you. But just understand that so far as the metaphor is concerned, we're talking about something that a little bit will grow. And baking soda doesn't have that characteristic. If you don't put enough baking soda in a loaf of bread or a cake or whatever, it don't do what it's supposed to do. Whereas with a little leaven, you can put it in there and let it grow for a while, and it will. All right. Let's go to verse 24. You are to observe this thing, he says. Have we heard this before? Maybe it's important. He keeps repeating it. As an ordinance to you and to your sons forever. And it'll come to pass when you're in the land that that Yahuwah will give you according to all he's promised. Keep this service. Now, can we keep it out of the land? No, we're in exile. And admittedly, there are things that we can't quite do. But certainly we can do the part that says remember. We can teach our children too, which is what this next verse is going to say. When it comes to pass, when your children come to you and they ask questions like this, what do you mean by this service? I do like this too, because there's an essential element of Midrash, of this concept of how to teach your children, how to teach young people, how we teach Torah, how we do the things here. We try to do it here as best we can. You know, we're physically separated. We got people from all over the world that occasionally check in. It's wonderful we have this tool with the internet, and we're very thankful for that. And to some extent, it's interactive. It's not quite as interactive as sitting down with your children would be, or having a fellowship that gathers in person, like we're thankfully able to do tonight and on occasion, even though we're out in the middle of the boondocks. But we can ask questions. The questions are good. And that's why the Bible teaches us this way. It's the essence of Midrash is that, you know, think of the toughest questions you can ask. Because by questions and by giving the answers and hearing the answers and by this interaction is how we really learn. So what do you mean by this service? The inquisitive child asks. Well, then you're to say, it is the sacrifice of the Passover of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. When he passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Mitzrayim, he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses. And they bowed in worship. Children of Israel went, and they did so. As Yahuwah had commanded, so did they. And then we know what happened. So, key, this idea of the questions. Really good thing. teach your children. Now, with that, what I want to do is I want to make a couple of observations. I know I've talked about this one before. This is a classic piece that another one of my favorites, a guy named Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, wrote about teaching your children. And he makes some very good connections that that I find particularly apropos, and of course it's the kind of thing I like to talk about, and it's part of the reason why I started with the news tonight. Because you know what? We failed to teach our children. When you fail to teach the children, they don't know any better. And when you look at a society like what America has become, people are literally ignorant of their rights. There's an old saying, if you don't know what your rights are, you ain't got none. They're ignorant of the law. They're certainly ignorant of the Torah. They don't know his name. They don't know his character. They think that something having to do with bunnies and eggs is what really matters on this appointed time of Yah, that they don't even recognize as an appointed time of Yah anymore. That's for Jews. Wrong, wrong, wrong on every score. The failure has literally become about as complete as it can be. Although there's a few people that think they remember some of it. There are more and more among the Christians and among other groups that are beginning to question, saying we've inherited lies from our fathers, things when there's no truth, they're coming out. That's good. We're thankful for that. And I think part of the real process that lies ahead as more and more people come out is we not only got to learn to teach our children, we got to teach people that are no longer children but never learned when they were. So back to this piece from Rabbi Sacks. What creates freedom, he asks. What was it that happened in Mitzrayim? Yahuwah delivered them by a mighty hand. Once they got out, they still didn't quite know how to walk it. So I love going through the Ten Commandments and the understanding that right after that, he starts talking about slavery and marriage and so many things that are the bedrock bases of society. If we don't learn those things, we got a mess. So what creates freedom, he asks? Well, is it a revolution in the streets, mass protests, civil war, massive voting revolutions, change of government, ousting of the old guard? Well, sometimes when that happens, and it doesn't happen very often, the revolutions like the American Revolution are very, very few and far between. Sometimes all that happens, and this is what we've seen in America for the last, decades anyway, the tyranny of minority is replaced by a tyranny of a different majority or even a different minority. The faces change, the lies, the suffering remain. So take a look instead at the contrast that you see in Torah, Exodus, Deuteronomy. They have a whole different take about the Israelites' journey from slavery into freedom. And Moshe keeps returning to this one theme. He talks about it here, talks about it in Deuteronomy, and I'll turn to that so that I got it sitting open as well. We've already kind of sort of touched on it. Teach your children. What are we supposed to say to them? Moshe says, how you teach your children is important. Teach your children on that day. Say to your child, it says. Moshe speaks over and over again about the duty of parents to do that, to educate their children. Tell the story. So, in the meanwhile, ever since that time, we got a whole lot of stuff that's been written. And he points out, I thought this was a great observation, because it kind of echoes things I've been seeing and talking about for a while, too. People seem to think that, oh, when there's tyranny at hand, the fix is politics. We got to vote for a different bad, evil, power-grabbing, oath-breaking you-know-what who will fix the things that were done by the last few from both sides of the same aisle. How funny is that, right? You want what Einstein said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, is the definition of insanity. So we got repressive regimes worldwide, and still, people are surprised. Shocked, shocked, I tell you, when the new guard turns out to be just as bad as the old guard. Religious believers claim to believe in God. Now this is, it's amazing, and yet it's true. This is a tremendous and disgusting observation. Religious believers will claim that they have faith in God, and yet that faith is small compared to the faith that they put in politicians. I've said for a long time, if you start thinking that there's going to be a Mashiach right in on a white horse to Washington, you're going to be gravely disappointed. And people have been. They're disappointed in the past, they're disappointed in the present, and yet they still don't get it. They still don't say, you know, this hasn't worked. Politician B, C, D, E, F, and G, each one just builds on the successes and putting more and more of the law away and trashing the God of the Bible and moving more and more in a direction of utter depravity. Maybe we need to vote for somebody different next time. Yeah, that'll fix it. Well, Moshe has a different suggestion. He says, the world we build tomorrow is born in the stories we tell our children today. Tell them this story. Get them to continue the heritage that is described in the Torah, not through blind obedience, which is the worst preparation you can imagine for liberty, but through active, challenging conversation across the generations, and indeed, that term in the Hebrew, midrash. Ask the questions. Get them to ask the questions. Far too little, he notes, is said about education in the world today. Now, I will disagree. I know what he's getting at here. But no, I think there's a lot of lip service paid to education. We're going to love that education. We'll make it free. It's just that what they're being sold is not real education. It's negative education, right? I quote Bill Bonner. You have to unlearn the things that you were taught that are wrong before you get back to being merely dumb ignorant. So you have to actively unlearn the bad stuff to get back to merely being zero, totally uneducated, and then you can start over again. So get rid of the negative education first. And that's a problem. Yeah, he's right. It's focusing on the wrong things. And what does Torah do here? Tells us what the right thing is. To focus on the fact that, tell this story so that you know one thing. There is a creator of the universe. He's made us promises, and he'll keep them. By the way, there are some conditions in some of those. We better keep those too. We have to teach our children. He notes the following things. Freedom comes when you respect the freedoms of others. Now let's pause there for a second. I was calling people hypocrites, and I was saying negative things about people that I would call evil, because they're calling good evil and evil good. And they're demanding that people who are ignorant, yeah, because they've been negative educated, they think that their rights come from Big Brother and they're wrong, and they think that they need a license in order to feed their families from the same evil Big Brother to engage in commerce. What they don't realize is that there are strings attached, and they've committed the sin of Esau. They sold their birthright for a cup of pottage. So they got to change something. Well, it's going to change. The change has got to be in who they put their trust. And, of course, the key is that the God of the universe, he gives us a choice. I've laid before you this day life and blessing, death and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Choose life, choose life. I saw a piece this week, literally what's going on in so many places around the world. It's choice of death. People are being trained to choose death. Look at what's happening with the homosexual lobby. What kind of life comes out of a man lying with a man as with a woman and committing abomination? It's a choice of death. And when people are told, you will support something that the God of the Bible, your supposed God that you don't actually do anything to support, No, we're going to tell you what you must do. Or we'll punish you. What are you more afraid of? What are you more rewarded by? Who will you serve? Choose life or choose death? So the God of the Bible gives us a choice. And we need to give other folks the choice. And that's why I object so much to the homosexual lobby and the mandatory vaccine lobby and the mandatory insurance lobby and all these other abominations. Because they're saying, no, we know better than you. We're your God. We will not allow you to make a choice about your children or your body. You're going to go through an airport, we're going to grope you, microwave you, and grab your children's breasts or crotch. How's that for teaching you who's boss and who the slaves are? If you want freedom, you respect the freedom of others. And just remember that our Creator has given us a choice. When we start moving in a world where his law has been done away with and replaced with the so-called law of the prince of this world, well, the choice is gone. Also, he notes that responsibilities come with rights. You want to talk about rights? Great. Understand that rights exist in a free society because there are responsibilities that go with them. If Big Brother's providing you with privileges, he takes away the responsibility and the freedoms that come with being able to make decisions and even to fail. Lots of elements of freedom matter. All right, so I like this. Liberty, he says, is not born on the battlefield. With rare exceptions, and almost invariably, we look back at the American experiment, we find that it was, we will pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. What? You mean that God that isn't allowed in schools anymore? The more you study about what was going on, and the more you realize that, we've heard all these lies. Oh, they were Masons. Oh, they were deists. So, well, you know what? They had a heck of a lot more faith in the God of the Bible, and they put their lives on the line. than anything you're going to get taught in what now passes for schools today. The message is, he notes, in the world's oldest ritual, Passover, Pesach, and it's still being practiced. Now, this is one other thing that I'll close on this note, because I thought this is fascinating. And when we go through the Passover celebration, ritual, traditions, teachings, right? Teach your children. There are some specific things that Torah tells us where to do. Since I almost turned to it, I'll mention it here. One of those, right? The teaching that is mentioned in most of the Haggadah that people will have heard, it shall be, it says, when you come into the land which Yahuwah, your Elohim, is giving you, you make it, possess it, dwell in it, you take some of the first fruits, put them in a basket, go to the place where he puts his name, go to the priest, and say the following, I declare today that Yahuwah Eloheka, that I have come to this country, which Yahuwah swore to our fathers to give us. He takes the basket, and he gives this little speech. You've heard, my father was a wandering Aramean, about to perish. He went down to Egypt, dwelt there, few in number, built a nation, became mighty and prosperous and populous. But the Egyptians afflicted us, mistreated us, laid hard bondage upon us, and we cried out to Yahuwah, Elohim of our fathers. He heard us. He looked on our affliction, our labor, and our oppression, and he brought us out of the land of bondage of Mitzrayim with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great terror and with great signs and wonders. There's a lot more. And interestingly enough, there's, of course, as you might suspect, there's a whole lot of tradition, too. Now, I will frequently say, you know, we are the church of no tradition. We need to understand that tradition is not the same thing as what is written. Yeshua famously made a number of comments and teachings that I really, really find absolutely, positively right on the money. Mark 7, by your traditions you've made the commandments of God, of Elohim, of no effect. And that essentially the men had come to the point where they replaced the commandments of God with the traditions of men. That's wrong. We don't want to do that. But you know what? Just as it's true that there are a lot of traditions that are antithetical, and we got tons of them in post-constitutional America, antithetical to the creator of the universe, just as that is true, there are also some traditions that have some pretty good teaching associated with them. And so Passover's probably one time more than any other during the year when I will sometimes pull the traditions out. They're good to talk about. They're good to midrash about and discuss. And, you know, even if we don't necessarily agree with all the traditions, it's the discussion that helps to teach. And that truly is a wonderful thing. So, as you go through this time and this season, teach your children. Midrash, let iron sharpen iron, talk with one another. Let this be a time of blessing and of study and of hearing his voice and his word and asking him, what is it, Father, that you would teach us this right here, this very Passover Pesach season? May he bless you and mightily show you the things that he has for you at this time. Thanks, and Shabbat Shalom.